Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to talk about MSU's disappointing 65-64 loss to the Hoosiers in Bloomington today. It's a loss that doesn't knock Michigan State out of the NCAA tournament, but certainly makes a win at the Big Ten tournament a must-be to be assured of another bid. It was a game that now seems kind of typical for the Spartans, where there's almost no consistency throughout the game. The start of the game was just terrible, with the complete inability to get anything going on the offensive end, and Indiana carving them up on the defensive end side of the ball. And then after going down 17, MSU started finally scoring, defending, and miraculously got the lead down to just 5 at halftime. Then they start out the second half in the first 2 minutes hitting a bunch of open shots, and then we're up about 5 to 6 points most of the second half until near the end of the half when Indiana went an 8-0 run to take the lead back. It was kind of back and forth from there, with the Spartans searching for answers in the paint on defense and riding Tyson Walker on offense. And really, despite Indiana missing almost all their free throws down the stretch, Michigan State just couldn't hit a shot in the final possession as Tyson missed and nothing would go on the offensive boards. So they lose by 1 point. Now Michigan State is locked in as the 8th seed as we're recording this. Ends the regular season at 10-10 with wins on the road and losses at home. A regular season punctuated by inconsistent play on full display, the season closer. Definitely a game where they had no business winning and then no business losing. And, you know, here we are heading to Minneapolis having dropped 4 or 5 down the stretch.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's something, because when you looked at the schedule heading into these last 5 games, the feeling was, well, they could win 4 of these 5.
Yeah.
And with the only one that seemed like a likely loss being Purdue, and instead, and this is why, you know, this would, in my mind, of those other 4 games, this one was always the diciest because it was on the road.
Sure.
So yeah. This is the one that would have been toughest, but you only go 1-2 in the 3 home games. This is the position you put yourself in. I'm going to differ with you a little bit.
Okay.
I don't think they need to win the Big Ten tournament game to get a bid.
Oh, I don't think they do, but I think to not sweat, they need to win.
Okay,
one.
Fair enough. Because what I do think is at stake in that game is, and to be honest with you, I haven't even looked at who they're playing, so I couldn't tell you.
It's Ohio State or Minnesota. As we talk right now.
Okay. So that's, you know, the way Ohio State's been playing, that if they win, that wouldn't look good. And Michigan State split with Minnesota. So neither of those are automatics. But the thing is, I think the real danger is you slip to a Dayton game.
Right.
If you lose. And you're right. You still wouldn't feel ultra comfortable going into Sunday. So better to win. But they should have won this game. You could talk about the ebb and the flow of it, and yeah, certainly at points in the first half, it was seemingly done. But this when Michigan State played well in this game, they were doing 2 things, and they were really interrelated with each other. On offense, on defense, they were playing with energy and pace, and when they struggled, they did not. It is infuriating to me. People can talk about the 5 and all the other nonsense they want to obsess about. But to me, this game, watching it, it was crystal clear what the problem is offensively. And you know what it is? It's when they slow it down in the half court, pound out seconds off the clock with AJ primarily, just dribble, 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 and nobody's moving. And yes, that's on the coaching staff too. But it's also on the goddamn point guard. It's his job to get people into sets, to get it moving. When Michigan State was effective today, it was because the men and the ball were moving.
Mm-hmm.
When they weren't, it wasn't. And defensively, I would largely say the same thing. When they went through periods where Indiana found it very difficult to score, it's because Michigan State was making it tough on them. They were making entry passes tough. They were deflecting balls. They were playing with energy. When they weren't, they struggled. So to me, you can talk for hours about all this stuff in minutia, but the truth of the matter is, I think it really, we're 30 whatever games in. That's what it is with this team. Mm-hmm. You want to play hard. You want to play with energy. You want to move. Good things can happen. You don't, you're probably going to lose. Michigan State's offense down the stretch of that game was abysmal. And it was abysmal because they stopped moving. The ball stopped moving. Guys stopped moving. Now, maybe that's on Izzo. Maybe that's the particular plays he was calling led themselves to that. But I could see it coming. With about 5 minutes to go, they went into that stuff where every possession, it was walk the ball up, dribble up top for about 10 seconds before anybody really does anything in the way of movement. And you wonder why you're in so many late shot clock situations. You wonder.
You've wasted two-thirds of the clock, yeah.
You've wasted all that time, and you're not going to generate the kind of looks that you want when you're playing that way. Very extremely frustrating to watch. I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. I'm frustrated just thinking about how damn irritating it is to watch that. And I don't know what the disconnect is. People want to get on Izzo about substitution patterns and who he starts at the five and all this other stuff. You want to get on him about something that actually matters? Get on him about that.
Yeah.
Get on him about the fact that way too often this team cuts 180 degrees away from where they are most effective, which means they play slowly. Bo Ryan's Wisconsin is not coming through that door. That is not this team. Move the ball.
What is the difference? Because I feel like when Trey's running the point, does he just attack more? Does he not wait for the screens? And AJ's always kind of waiting for the screens to come up. I don't know. I mean, he's definitely directing traffic. I can't see everything when I'm on TV sometimes.
It's not even just waiting for pick and roll to come, though. It's sometimes just getting, oftentimes, not getting into the sets. Now, look, that's on other guys too.
Sure, yeah.
But my point is, that is the, just as we would say for an offense in football that cannot get, and I hesitate, let me take that step back. I loathe cross-sport comparisons, but here I think it makes at least a little bit of sense. It is just like in a situation with an offense where if you are repeatedly getting expired play clock situations, you're going to eventually say that's on the damn quarterback. It's his job to get people set. And if they're not getting set, you want to see him going after people and tearing them a new one so it doesn't happen again. Well, I don't ever really see that. I see AJ, the one biggest difference between he and Trey Holloman is that Trey Holloman will pretty consistently look to push the ball into the forecourt.
Yeah.
AJ doesn't do that. There's a lot of slowing it down. There's a lot of take your time. That does not cut to the benefit of this team. It just doesn't. I've seen enough. Rarely does that cut to the benefit of Michigan State. I remember talking about this. This is something I used to bang the damn drum on in the 14-15 season that they finally started to get right. And that's why that team went on a run late that went all the way to the Final Four. They started playing fast. And when you say that, people think you're just talking about fast breaking. I'm not. This team actually, not that they got a ton done today, but I think they're still in the top 20 in terms of transition points. So mm-hmm. this team has brought that back, something that was missing last year. That part of the game is fine. I'm talking about when they're playing in the half court. It is painful to watch, because when they go into that stuff, I would love, and I'm not about to do it, I would love to see a chart as to how effectively they shoot when they're getting a shot up, say, in the first 20 seconds or so of the shot clock versus the last 10. And that's, by the way, that's not going to be unusual. Most teams are probably going to be better in the former than the latter. But then the other thing would be, well, how many possessions as a percentage of your overall possessions are you getting a shot up late or not? And Michigan State's, I'm going to bet, is tilted far too much to that latter category. It just does not play to their strengths. They are not a team that particularly exploits mismatches really well, I don't think. And I think it affects a state of mind. When you see this team thinking, hesitating, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
They're in real trouble when they do that. You see it sometimes, Malik Call. If Malik is able to get into a move around the basket fairly fluidly, he's in great shape. If he's kind of, you know, back in his way, and there are times he can do that, but when he over dribbles, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
When AJ over dribbles, it's a big, big, big problem. Those are issues. You know, I'll even say, even though I think he's clearly their best one-on-one manufacturer shot guy, Tyson Walker falls prey to it sometimes too. That last possession that MSU had, I don't know what the hell that was.
Yeah.
That was not good. That was not good. I understand Tyson is capable of hitting that shot. That is not optimal.
No,
that is not optimal. What should have, and I'm going to contradict myself in a second, what probably should have happened there, in my view, is you work with him to pick and roll to try to get him switched on a big.
Yeah.
That is something that I think he could take advantage of, either blowing past that player or rising up and taking a less contested and easier jump shot than the one he took.
Yeah.
That was a terrible, whatever that was supposed to be, I hope to God that wasn't the intention. I doubt it was, but that was terrible.
This goes to, I think what I mentioned last episode or maybe one or two back, I feel like the plays out of bounds or the after timeouts, end of half, you know, with the first half, they've been really, I don't know what the success rate is, but it's incredibly poor.
It had been pretty good for a lot of this year.
I just feel like it hasn't worked very well.
Not lately, but they've actually done,
maybe it's recency bias.
Yeah, it is. But it hasn't been good lately. There's no doubt about that. And they haven't been in, the thing you got to remember is they haven't had, mostly what you're talking about is end of first half situations.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been in many of these.
No, but I feel like it looked like their end of half possessions too. At least, like you said, at least recently. And I guess the beginning of that game, I felt like, you know, they didn't look like they were pushing and they were moving pretty fast. They just were missing, and they had lots of good looks. I think, you know, they just started missing everything.
I don't agree.
Hall had a, you know, open 12 footer and then they had, the ones that looked in rhythm too. He was missing. They just kind of missed some.
Yeah. That happened as the half wore on. I'm talking about the start of that game, the first 10 minutes or so. Yeah. Eventually they were even missing good shots, but they were the furthest thing from being hard to guard that you can be.
Yeah. Well, they look like they did against Iowa.
How does that happen? How does that happen? Well, that happens when you are not forcing a defense to move. Just contrast most of that first half with what you saw over the first, say, 10 minutes of the second half. Worlds apart in terms of the way the guys themselves were moving, but just as if not more importantly, the way the ball was moving.
Yeah.
Ball movement on this team. And for a team that's got a lot of good passers, it is maddening to me when you don't see them utilize that. And way too often, that's been the case. They are just squaring guys up. It's very stagnant. They're not a great pick and roll team this year. They just haven't been. And I think some of that is a lot of it is the quality of screening has not been good, but I also think the mentality has not been there on the part of the guards. But they get, when they are bad, it's usually because they're really, really easy to guard. And why is that? Because they're not moving, ball's not moving.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Spanarkle had it exactly right. When they got rolling and Tyson got hot, a lot of that, I didn't look at his numbers to see what AJ's, let me take a look here, to see what AJ's assist numbers.
He had 6 and 0. So it went to assists.
A lot of those assists came, I think, off plays where he penetrated, the defense was drawn to him, and he was able to kick to Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about. It doesn't necessarily mean the ball is swinging back and forth around the horn, you know, three times. It can be reflected in a lot of different ways, but that's good spacing. That's good use of the dribble to create a problem for the defense that's going to leave you with an open look. And in the second half, for a large part of it at least, until the end, they did a really good job of generating those kind of looks.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you think, you mentioned they missed some open ones in the first half. That's absolutely true. They also, once again, were horrendous around the rim.
Yeah.
Early on. Absolutely awful. But they were generating good looks and getting good results from it because the offense was playing with pace and with intent. It wasn't this dribble, dribble, dribble. Everybody stand around. We get a half-ass screen up top that doesn't go anywhere. We reset. We do it again. And by then, you're down inside 5 seconds. And so you got a hand grenade on your hands. It's terrible to watch, extremely frustrating. And it's frustrating mostly because I think it's entirely within their control. Within their control. They can play differently. They just aren't.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, a lot of that, at some point, that is on the coaching staff. I mean, you see it again and again and again.
It's on the coaching staff. Well, yeah, it's on the coaching staff. Yes. And I'll admit, I don't see the signs from the bench when they're going into those sets where you would see a coach getting it across to AJ, play with some urgency.
Yeah, right.
But it, for whatever reason, it's not happening.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's been a problem all year, and it's a problem right now. And if they don't get that solved, it's going to be one and done next week. And if they're fortunate enough to get into the tournament, it's going to be one and done there. If they don't play with pace, they can't win these kind of games, period.
We'll begin with Brothers Justin Gutters. If you need gutter work done in your house, and it is spring, it's time to make sure that water stays away from your house. There's no better crew to talk to than the Brothers. You can get a hold of them at thefinalfoursontheschedule.com/support. There you can find links to the guys on the east side of the state and the west side of the state. They'll take care of everything, do fantastic work, whether you're residential, commercial, big jobs, small jobs, clean things out, repair it, replace it, whatever needs to be done. The Brothers will take care of it. The player that Michigan State needed to keep in the gutter this game was Kaleo Ware, and he only had 28 points on 13 of 19 from the field, 1 for 2 from 3, 12 rebounds in 37 minutes, 2 assists and a turnover. I guess they did good defense on the free throw line. He only had 1 of 6 from there, but otherwise they had absolutely no answers for him. No matter who they put on him, I don't feel like anyone really slowed him down at all.
He's come miles in the last 4 weeks. This is why he was rated where he was coming out of high school last year.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I remember he played pretty well for Oregon in that game. MSU barely held them off. But he didn't do that very much otherwise during the season. And so he opted to transfer. Indiana got him. It didn't get off to a great start because I know there was a point that Mike Woodson called out exactly what had been his problem at Oregon, which was lack of motor. Well, he didn't have a lack of motor in this game, and you saw it. He really used his length effectively, really used it. I mean, some of those plays you mentioned, you know, Michigan State couldn't stop him. some of those plays were actually reasonably well guarded. They really were. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just he's so long, and he's got a great sense of how to finish around the rim, that there's not a hell of a lot you can do. So what that means is, if you're going to contain him, you got to do a better job preventing him from touching the ball in the first place, or at the very least, prevent him from being able to get into a shot motion. And Michigan State was not great in those areas. They tried. They just weren't very good. So, yeah, no real answers for him. You mentioned 1-for-6 at the line, but he hit the big one.
Yeah.
He hit the one that won him the game. So,
yeah. Yeah, the one when they played him in last year when they were playing against Oregon, I think he had 17 points. He was bad from, I think he was like 2-for-9 from three. So he was a lot more three happy. This game he only took two. And just kind of focus on what his game is, you know, at this point.
There it is. That's a really good point, because his 3-point shooting percentage this year is pretty good. I think it's in the mid 30 range, but his attempts are not. Yeah, he was 1-for-2 in this game. I don't believe he even averages 2 attempts per game this year. So he has focused on using his physical advantages. And boy, you saw him do that in this game. That was just a very mature, very poised kind of game from him. And boy, thank God he's getting the NBA's attention. And I hope he goes, because if he comes back, he's a major problem for everybody. I don't think he's coming back. But that was a hell of a performance. And Michigan State could have and should have done more to contain it. I'm not gonna disagree with that. But even if they had played a much better game defensively, he was still going to go for at least 20 with the way he was playing. That was very, very, very smart basketball on his part. And he's just playing with more energy. And I mean, you're never going to confuse him with, you know, Draymond Green, but he's playing with more energy and toughness now than he used to. That's the part that I think that and getting him to understand who he really is as a player are the parts that I think, you know, Mike Woodson takes a lot of heat, most of it deserved, but you got to give him some credit at least for being able to reach this guy at some point during the season. Not early enough for it to really matter for them, but early enough for it to matter for Khalil Ware, that's for sure.
I mean, you almost kind of wonder I think that you get a little bit of that light switch for Booker too. I mean, he's starting to see it,
absolutely.
But it'd be kind of nice. He feels a lot like the same, but like kind of a smaller guy, or at least not as strong. And so he's just living outside a little bit. So maybe you could see the same thing where he comes a little bit better, gets willing to get dirty a little bit, you know, later next year.
Xavier Booker is not quite as tall. It's not quite as long as Khalil Ware, but there are some rough similarities. Absolutely. And similar criticisms, lack of strength, lack of motor. So, you know, Michigan State feels like they've really gotten across to him at the motor part. And I think they have. I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. And he's gotten a lot stronger. He's put on a lot of good weight since he's been there. It's just there was so far to go. And, you know, that's the thing you never know. Some guys, you know, Jaren Jackson was able to put on good weight and get appreciable strength gains in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
So what was a weakness heading into his senior year of high school was not a weakness at all by the time he got to Michigan State. That didn't happen for Booker. Didn't happen for Ware. But you can hope that, I mean, you look at Ware right now, he's not, you know, he's not Shaq, but he's plenty strong for the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
He's strong enough for his length to play, which is really all that matters, because he's got, there was one, I forget, I think it was Hall, actually had him blocked out, and Ware just went over him for an offensive rebound.
Right.
That's the advantage. So if he's strong enough, he doesn't have to completely beat Malik Hall up. He's just got to be strong enough to stay in position to let his size do the work. And he's been able to do that. So that should be a goal for Xavier Booker next year. Get strong enough so that your unique physical gifts start to play as the advantage that they can be.
All right. Well, let's go on to the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids and the player of Michigan State cleans the glass the best. The Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids, obviously, they're the best guys to take care of your glass at your house, your business, wherever it might be. Again, small jobs, big jobs, they'll take care of all of it. They should be your first one to contact when you're looking for taking care of that sort of stuff. They can also even power wash your house, and it is probably time that you've had a lot of mud splatters and stuff and gets dirty over the winter. So it's a good time to take care of all that stuff, get all spiffed up for the summer. You can check it out at thefinalfoursontheschedule.com/support. There you can find a link. 15% off. You mentioned Rebound when you get your estimate, and they'll come out and take care of it real quick, and they have great pricing as well. All right, so you had Malik Hall. I had Mahdi, and that is, I believe, going to be the last time Mahdi Sissoko is going to be selected for the cleaning the glass, as he used to be automatic, and now he's almost a complete no-show. I think he played 6 minutes or 7 minutes and had 4 fouls and no rebounds or anything. I guess he had a dunk. So Malik Hall at 7, but also to Cooper. So that means that you get half a point. So now we're tied 6.5 to 6.5. So now you get to live with a half point.
Right. Are we taking this into the postseason as well, I assume?
I think so.
All right. Well,
yeah. So I there's no reason to stop.
Hopefully we're going to at least each get one crack at Malik Hall.
Yeah, let's hope at least once, maybe more. Although it is hard to imagine this team stringing a couple more than 2 or 3 wins at the most in a row. But, you know, who knows the way this team plays. We'll talk about it. I guess maybe just go on before we go into that too much. Let's just talk about the keys of the game. Those are brought to you by Nudge Printing. Summer's coming. It's time to get some T-shirts, get some Michigan State gear. Football's going to be starting pretty soon before you know it as well. So you want to make sure you get all that stuff. Maybe you want a big wall decal. You can get those also at Nudge Printing. They get 20% off if you mention Final Four. Type that in at the coupon code at checkout. We'll finish our tabulations for the Big Ten predictions as far as the final standings. I know that no one is even close to having Michigan State in 8th position, but a lot of people got Purdue at first. So I'll have to kind of figure that out, and then we'll get the prizes in. That's always with Nudge gift cards. I wore my Nudge stuff yesterday, super comfortable, the best stuff. My wife wore it today, going to the gym. I don't know, you can't beat the stuff. If you've not had a chance to check out their stuff, they got a huge selection, so go to nudgeprinting.com and pick some out today. All right, so the first key of the game was the glass. Indiana is a terrible rebounding team, which means, of course, that they can rebound well against Michigan State. So they got, Michigan State had 12 offensive rebounds, which was not bad, a 30% rebounding rate off of 40 misses. Unfortunately, they gave up 12 offensive rebounds to Indiana off 30 misses, so that gave them a 40% offensive rebound rate. And they were just killing them, especially in the first half.
Early,
And I feel like they're, you know, as usually is the case, they're all critical ones, and they actually ended up outscoring Michigan State 12-9 as far as second chance points. So the board's not the advantage we'd hoped Michigan State would get, and so, I don't know, there it is.
Not great. I mean, where Renault between them had 6.
Yeah.
So those are guys who did some real damage. And they seem to be often, particularly where, I'd like to see it. I want to say he scored on all 3 of his.
I feel like they scored. Right.
Yeah, they were all right at the rim. You know, some of them were just, at times it's defensive breakdown. So, I can think of one, forgetting who it was that threw the shot up. Somebody throws a shot up, and it might have been Anthony Leal, and Carson Cooper had to come over to cut him off at the rim and at least contest it. Okay, but that means you've got Jaden Akins and one of the other guards trying to keep Ware off the court. It's just not going to happen. That's because there's a defensive breakdown that leads to that, you know? So some of it was that. Some of it was Michigan State's defense. And then some of it, especially early in that game, I just felt like Indiana just out.
They're playing,
you know, all the things we've been talking about the last 2 games, Michigan State gained rebound, and, you know, it was a team effort. Everybody was going hard, out the window.
Yeah, I think they're just getting outworked. I mean, and there was someone had a screenshot of there are 4 Indiana players that are outside the 3-point arc. There's one guy who's
Babacco. It was a disgrace.
Everybody else was inside the arc for Michigan State.
He takes the shot, and he gets the rebound almost perfectly in the middle of a triangle of Michigan State players. That shouldn't ever happen.
No.
Yeah, that came in the first half. That was a particularly disgraceful moment. You're right.
But I think that explains a lot of the rebounding issues this season. You just see stuff like that, and you're just like, it doesn't make any sense.
Where is it? Guys not moving.
Yeah.
When they're stationary and stagnant, this team is not good. Very few teams are good that way, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
But it's blatantly obvious with this team.
All right. So the second key to the game is the transition game. And I think this was fast break points, 9-7. Although advantage for Indiana, I don't feel like it was really that. I felt like Michigan State was doing well, but I guess that during that stretch where they were getting hammered early, there were a couple of fast break points from Indiana. Generally, there's not a whole lot of transition stuff.
I don't know if I buy that. Maybe it's not accurately capturing secondary break numbers that were particularly in the second half. I thought Michigan State really was able to get something done via playing faster. So,
Well, that's also transition.
Yeah, but it wasn't an advantage
for sure,
the way it should have been. But I don't think Indiana did a better job in transition than Michigan State.
Well, the other key of the game was to turn them into jump shooters. And I think Michigan State did when they turned them into jump shooters, they didn't hit many. They were hitting that first little flurry where you're kind of like, this is not sustainable for Indiana. But and then they started missing most of those jump shots. But then they just were smart and just going into Ware and Renault to either just kind of bully their way in post scores.
I would say that was not a good enough job.
Yeah.
Wasn't a good enough job. Indiana was 6-for-17 from three. That's probably about at the furthest reaches of what I would say would be ideal for them, particularly with Galloway out of the lineup for most of the way with some kind of knee injury. We didn't get any clarity on that. He had ice on it, which is strange. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened. They didn't do it. Was I talked about how during those periods where Michigan State was effective defensively, what were you seeing happen? Well, you were seeing them deflect a lot of balls.
Yeah.
You were seeing signs of activity from Michigan State, and too often they were just a little too complacent in terms of letting Ware and Renault get easy touches. And that's the whole deal. This Indiana team does play pretty good offensive basketball inside the arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we knew
for obvious reasons
coming in.
We saw it. Yeah.
Right. And so you look at those guys, I mean, you know, between them, 44 points. Two guys. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
You needed to do a better job at forcing them into, let's say, late clock situations where somebody on the perimeter has to jack up a shot. The things that were happening to Michigan State at times because they were stagnant offensively. Michigan State needed to force a little more of that from Indiana than they did.
And to your point, they were doing that end of the first half, beginning of the second half.
Yeah,
they were doing that
absolutely.
With Indiana. And then
absolutely. Yeah.
Then it got to a more comfortable pace and rhythm for Indiana coming back. It is interesting too, you know, college basketball, I don't know, pros are like this a little bit, but college is so much more momentum that it seems to be affect the game than it just where you get these huge runs one way or the other. And then something inexplicably ends it and then it goes the other direction. And I mean, certainly easier at home. And so that Indiana with that 8-0 run, that really was kind of the end of Michigan State.
To turn the 7-point lead into a 1-point deficit.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
because they got back in the game there,
they were able to get the lead back. I mean, and they had opportunity. Let's not forget, Michigan State not only had that possession at the end to try to win it, they had a possession before that.
Yeah,
with the game tied, where Tyson missed again a tough shot, a shot he can make.
Ugh, and then Carson.
Not ideal. And then Carson gets the offensive rebound and just. Forces it up.
I mean, he had AJ out.
Kick it back out. I mean, that's the mantra should be for those guys pretty much always.
Yeah.
Because they've been so inefficient trying to finish. And I know that's far easier said than done. You also want guys to be aggressive. So if they have an easy opportunity there, they don't turn it down. They convert it, you know. It's a fine line to walk. But, yeah, you'd love to have that one back. But, yeah, Michigan State had, even despite that run, Michigan State had, and honestly, that was two threes, one from Mbako, who's become an okay shooter, one from Xavier Johnson, who's a terrible shooter. And you saw why. His form is atrocious. But he manages to guide it in, and that's literally what he was doing. He was guiding it, not shooting it. But it fell.
Well, that's where that momentum thing, right? Like everybody's hitting things, and then you kind of thought, oh, he's going to hit this, and certainly he sure enough he did.
Shooter hit it. But that's, I mean, I don't think that was, might have felt like a turning point. Michigan State had many opportunities after that. It's not like Indiana pushed it out to 8 or 10 and MSU was scrambling to get back from there. You know?
No, I guess my point is just that it felt like that was a turning point in the sense that Indiana started feeling like they could win again. I mean, it looked like they were kind of like a beaten team, and then they got re-energized.
And maybe it's also a point, or shortly, you know, right around there, that I think Michigan State started to get really stagnant again offensively.
Yep.
They were good enough defensively, and they got enough out of their offense to hang around and still have a chance to win. But, man... you did not see a lot of that same offense that we saw for the first, say, 12 minutes of the second half in the last eight.
Yeah.
It was a different deal.
Yeah. All right. So the fourth key of the game was turnovers. Michigan State did a great job of turning Indiana over. They had 12 steals in this game. And, they turned the ball over 10 times. Indiana had, I think, 16 turnovers. The one thing I'd say, you know, that just we're talking about that 8-0 run, I feel like three of those turnovers in Michigan State were during that run. I mean, I think they had like back-to-back-to-back turnovers or something like that. Maybe I'm misremembering that. But
no, that was a segment in the first half.
Okay.
Where they had that.
They weren't live ball. They were just like inopportune times, like the one where Malik Hall just like trips over his own feet and the pass off the back of Trey Holloman's head or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but at the same time, Michigan State was able to turn some of that stuff into productivity. You know, they had 17 points off turnovers. Indiana had 10. So that was the thing. Even with the rebounding difficulties, it wasn't an absolute slaughter. It just was very disappointing that it wasn't an advantage. But the turnovers gave Michigan State took, what was it, 10 more shots from the floor? No,
yeah, 10 more.
8 more and shots from the floor.
Yeah, and it's not like it was like they were, because of free throws. I mean, Indiana had some free throws.
Michigan State had the advantage. It's the difference was they shot so poorly. And again, you know, sub 40% against that defense, man, that's on you. That's not them. That's on Michigan State.
Because you saw at the end of the first half and being the second half, I mean, Indiana's defense was terrible. They weren't going hard through screens or round screens. They're just lazy all over the place. And then Michigan State made them hard to cover. But Indiana was really, you could tell they're bad. You could tell they're not a good team.
If you move and if the ball moves, you will break them down. And that is exactly what we saw during that stretch. You will call it the middle of the game, where Michigan State's offense was really clicking. That's exactly what happened. Indiana's defense is not good enough to recover against that stuff. If you are playing with pace and intent, it's hard for them. MSU did it, just not long enough.
So the fifth and final key to the game was the threes. I don't know. I guess we'll say, you know, Michigan State ended up shooting 8 for 25 for three, which is not terrible. That's probably... you know, 32%, it's not good enough. And Jaden was not good, 2 for 9. And I would say almost all those wide open threes that you expect him to hit, I mean, at least half of them. He should have had a couple more. And then, I mean, AJ was 2 for 3.
25's too many. 25's too many. That's, you know, you can say that they're open shots. Okay. But and we've talked about this in other games, you also have to acknowledge that sometimes that's not all of it. You know, Jaden right now is not feeling it.
No.
So for him to take 9 threes, even if they're open, probably not optimal. Probably not what should be happening. Now, I understand shooters shoot. You have to have confidence. You have to have that mentality. And this also can be used to cut back against what I've been beating on about this whole discussion, which is they've got to play fast. Well, part of playing fast is you don't turn down good shots. You take
right.
And so I get all of that, but at the same time, it just feels to me like 25 for a team where they were this whole day was not, because they never, then you could argue there was that stretch early in the second half where Tyson and Jaden a little bit got rolling. Other than that, they spent most of the day not particularly dialed in. And so when that's happening, you would like to see a different balance in it. Now, 8 made threes is okay in terms of just sort of a raw number. It certainly was a better performance than we saw against Northwestern. But I just think it felt not a lot, but just a little bit like settling, a little bit at times, which again, I understand to some extent could be used to contradict my overall point about them needing to play faster.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could still play fast and not take those shots. You could pump fake and you could look to go by somebody, or you could just from that position, you could just look to attack. But it just felt a little bit off to me.
Yeah. Well, those, especially a lot of those with Akins where even offensive rebounds toss out to him. I mean, there's no one even shot fake.
You're right.
So if he goes in, drives in, he's just going to get in trouble from the baseline.
I guess you can say what it mostly comes down to is just, they didn't hit enough of the open looks they got.
I think that's it.
And I can buy that. It's just, when I look at those attempt numbers, that's a little higher than Michigan State likes to get. That's what I'm saying. Normally, they're more comfortable. They're comfortable in the 20 range. You start getting out to 25, that's a little bit outside of what they normally do. But you're right. Most of it is those are...
Yeah, they were rushed. And Malik... But even Malik's two, I thought, were good looks. They're ones that you want him to take. He just missed them.
Yeah.
And AJ inexplicably hit 2 out of 3. And ones that I did not really want him taking, but
right.
he did. But
I hear you.
So... I think, you know, so the other thing, which is not a key to the game, but always is a key, is how well Tyson plays. 30 points, 11 for 21 from the field, 4 of 8 from the 3, 4 of 4 from the line, couple rebounds, 3 assists, no turnovers, 3 steals. I assume this game his groin wasn't bothering him. I'm not quite sure if he's injured, if he's not injured. I mean, I think you made the point a while ago that it's probably more a shooter's problem than it is anything else. He looks fine. I can't tell what's wrong with him.
I'm sorry. I do not. I'm not saying that it's not a real injury.
Yeah, right.
I'm just saying I've seen him have enough really good games, including this one, to conclude whatever it is not enough to really hinder him very much. And it certainly shouldn't be used as an excuse for a bad day. I think he's just had some bad days.
Right.
I think it's that simple. I don't think that's something, I mean, you tell me, you're the doctor. I don't think that's something, well, today I feel a little better. And yesterday, or 3 days ago, when we played previously, I felt worse. It seems to me like it's an injury that kind of just is until you have enough time to rest it, to let it heal.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
It's probably not going up and down like a roller coaster to the point that we could attribute his success or failure on a given day to how he's feeling. I think he's just gone, you know, he spent a whole year being the number one guy on the scouting report, which was a new thing for him. Because even last year, I think he was at best 1B along with Hauser.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's it. And you saw today, you've seen all year, he gets defended very physically. He's not a big guy, to say the least. And so I think all that stuff, I'm more sympathetic to the idea that a whole season of going through that has maybe had an impact in wearing on him a little bit, as opposed to, well, it's the groin that's holding him back. Because, look, a guy where that's going on, he doesn't have a day like this.
Right. That's what I thought, too.
Yeah. I just don't, you know, and then and I understand there's a difference between lateral movement and explosive movement. I get that. But it seems to me like a guy with a serious groin injury that was really hindering him probably shouldn't be able to dunk the ball the way he did after the horn sounded against Northwestern.
Yeah, or three steals, you know, today. I mean, I just don't think you don't feel like he's getting exploited defensively. At least I don't, any more than, like, you know, normal. So I don't know.
I don't think so. Yeah, he doesn't look it doesn't look like he's a step slow or anything. I mean, look, do I believe that there could be some small things at the margins that might be making a difference here or there on occasion? Yeah, and that would be stuff that Tom Izzo could certainly tell you. But it's clearly not enough to be really hindering him, because he had 30 points. Now, I will say, there was a discussion on the Spartan Mag board the other day about somebody was posting they really didn't like the idea of end game situations basically turning into Tyson ISO situations.
Yeah.
And I noted that there have been times in his career where he's been successful with those.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's an all bad scenario. But today, look, there's no argument. Today, the last two possessions were Tyson ISOs, and they came up empty. And they were both, are they shots that he's capable of hitting? Yeah, but those were not high percentage shots. You know, I would have, in those situations, I would have preferred him, as I said, being able, Michigan State could do what they did in one of those scenarios historically where it worked with Tyson. 2 years ago against Purdue at Breslin, where they got him in a pick and roll isolated on Trevion Williams.
Yep.
And he just sized Trevion Williams up, used his quickness and his handle to create enough space and nailed it. Yeah. I would have much preferred to see that kind of circumstance than Tyson trying to make running, half jumpers going to the rim.
He is limited just because he's just not really big. Like, if he was 6'6", right, in that play, it gives you more options and opportunities, yeah, to score, get fouled and stuff, but he can get easily blocked if he gets in too deep, right?
I don't want to be too critical, because he did it in this game. He's clearly capable of making those types of shots.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, when it's tied, a minute to go, you've got the ball, and then you're down one with whatever it was, 14 seconds left. Those two possessions, those two situations, I would rather have a higher percentage play. And I didn't see Michigan State really even try. What they did, particularly the last one, is they just inbounded the ball to Tyson, and that was it.
Yeah.
That's what they were going to do. Tyson was going to try and beat the guy guarding. They didn't try to run him off a pick to get a switch. They didn't have him pass the ball and then try to get it back in a better position off movement. None of that. They just squared him up, said, go get it. Okay, but the shots that resulted from that, I don't think were optimal. The one thing I could say about the last shot was it did come early enough that you would have had an opportunity. They just couldn't get a clean offensive rebound. They battled. Yeah. They just couldn't secure it, and then the ball got kicked loose, and that was it.
Yeah, and that's a function of course, whenever you drive in that deep, everybody, especially end of game situation, everybody is sort of
right
in their deep. So that's the thing where, like, if you could tap it out, there might be someone open for three, right? But
right. Yep.
Everybody's in there trying to rebound. All right, so let's move on to our listener question for the show. This is brought to you by Juris Clovens, who's asking, what is the probability that either Sissoko and or Hogard use their COVID year and return for another season?
I think very low.
Yeah. Well, so that, I guess that's two questions there. One is with return for this season at Michigan State, and then one is just returning.
That's the low part. Now, do I think it's very possible that they will be playing college basketball next year? Yeah. I say that because now going through senior day doesn't mean anything. I mean, Malik and Tyson went through it last year.
Yeah.
And they came back. So that doesn't tell you anything.
Joey did it twice. Yeah.
But they went through it. But just listening to the way Izzo answered that about a week or so ago, and then taking into account the way Michigan State has assembled their roster and recruited, I just think, you know, in Mahdi's case, look, and we think we've had him on our show a couple times. Yeah, we think the world of him as a kid. But last year at this time, I would have been vehemently defending what Mahdi Sissoko brought to the table for Michigan State, because I think he had become a pretty damned effective defensive player, a good defensive rebounder, and a guy who could at least give you something on lobs to the rim, which had totally disappeared.
Yeah.
Some of that's on the guards too, by the way, but it's sure. Totally disappeared from Michigan State's game. And with him especially. And it's hard. It's impossible for me to make the claim that this year's version of Mahdi is giving them enough in those other areas that it makes up for the fact that he's not really an offensive threat. So given that he's a senior, you know, and the other two guys are juniors, now I don't know what happens with them either, but my thought would be probably Michigan State looks to add a big in the portal. Now, could that mean that they also lose one of Carson or Jackson? Yeah, it could. But I think Mahdi, I'd be very surprised if he was back. For that reason, that I just, we're at year four, and I just don't think the trajectory is where you would expect to see it. With AJ, obviously AJ Hogard, if he were to hit the portal, would be a very hot commodity. There would be a lot of programs out there that would look at AJ Hogard and say, I could squeeze more out of this guy. And who knows? Yep. Maybe they'll be right.
Sure.
But yeah. I think at Michigan State, when you look at how they've built, you've got Jeremy Fears coming back. You've got Trey Holloman. You also have Jace Richardson coming in, who was very capable of playing some point minutes. I'm not saying that's what I expect to be exclusively by any means, but he's capable of playing. So you've got three guys who are capable of playing that spot, starting with Fears, who, again, assuming that he checks out 100% physically, which I've heard nothing to the contrary, that he's progressing exactly as they would have expected. It's time. It's time for this to be his team, turn the keys to the program over to him. If you keep AJ, you're hindering that. You're hindering those younger players. And what is the exchange? The exchange is, well, maybe AJ gets it for a full season. Like, I thought AJ played pretty well today.
Yeah, I thought he was. I agree.
Other than the fact that, again, I put a lot of the responsibility for that stagnancy on him. But when Michigan State was flowing, AJ Hogard was really good. I thought he was pretty good defensively.
Yep.
You know, this was not a bad day for AJ. But the constant will he, won't he play the right way is just, I'm saying this just from my own perspective, 4 years is enough. You know, and we can say with some honesty that as Michigan State fans, we are very spoiled. We are spoiled because, for the most part, we have seen good to outlandishly good play at the point guard spot. Very rarely. I mean, you think about it over the years. What are the down years for Michigan State? Well, you'd say since they started going to NCAA tournaments, well, maybe the 2001-2002 season. Well, yeah, all Marcus Taylor did is lead the league in, I believe he led the league in scoring and assists. People forget that. So their best player was their point guard. The 05-06 season, coming off a Final Four, he still had some talent. Drew Neitzel was the point guard of that team. He wasn't yet great, but he wasn't bad, and he became very good the next two seasons. You know? Yeah, you go on and on and on. Michigan State has had exceptional play at that position. And we've now gone 4 years where, which corresponds to A.J. Hogarth's time here, where point guard play has been suboptimal.
Spotty?
Yeah, suboptimal. I'm saying that as an overall thing. Have there been periods where it's been really good and you thought maybe the light had flipped on? Absolutely. A.J. Hogarth in the NCAA tournament last year was fantastic. You know, and he's had other periods. He's had periods this year where he was playing very, very well for a short period of time. But the problem is he never got that consistency. He never were able to say, oh, he's figured it out. He's exactly the player he needs to be, and nothing's going to shake that. That's just not the case. It's never been the case. And so, to me, I think it's time. I would, if I were guessing, and it's merely a guess, I would assume that he will go in the portal and and go somewhere else for a fifth year. And again, he might, you know, I can't wait. And if you don't hear the sarcasm in this, check again. I can't wait for the endless updates on whatever A.J. Hogarth's production is at his next stop that Michigan State fans are inundated by other Michigan State fans. Because it's possible there's enough there that he could figure it out. But, you know, and I would like to acknowledge this. I tend to think my default assumption is that is something that is only solved by AJ himself. But there's always the possibility that just a different voice reaches him in a different way than Tom Izzo did, you know?
Yeah.
I think Tom Izzo is generally really, really, really good at getting through to guys to max out the best versions of themselves as players. But I you know, we'll see how it goes. I can't rule out that maybe some other program, some other situation, some other method is what's needed to get AJ to reach his top level on a consistent basis. But yeah, I don't expect either one of them.
Could you imagine him in the Big Ten? Like I'm trying to think of programs, maybe at Maryland or something like that. I'm trying to think where he might end up.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Anything's possible these days, right? I wouldn't even venture a guess because I honestly can't remember.
I don't think he'd go to Michigan.
His recruitment was at a high school, which sometimes gives you clues, but it's so long ago. I have to go back to refresh my memory who else was really in that. Because that was one that I'll admit, I didn't take seriously because they already had Jalen Terry. So I didn't think they were going to sign A.J. Hogarth. And then he committed. It caught me by surprise. Probably shouldn't have, but it did. He's obviously from Pennsylvania. So you would think if there's a desire to go home, well, that opens up the Big East. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, a lot of those places you could imagine. Maybe the A-10, certain schools in the A-10. I don't know. You know, it'd be very, if it happens, it'll be extremely interesting. And again, I say this with a lot of confidence. If A.J. Hogarth hits the portal, there will be big name programs that are involved in that. I don't think it's a situation as much as we get frustrated. It's because we know what the standard is at Michigan State. And also that, as I just got done saying, Michigan State clearly has been preparing for a post-AJ future. And if he came back for another year, you're going to lose some of that. I mean, I just can't see a scenario where that would make sense. But I would expect that big-name programs would be in on him. Maybe not as much Monty. Monty, it might be... you know, a mid-major where he could get a clearer path to a lot of minutes. because I would assume that's something he would like to get back to for his last go around. Although the flip end of that is that it's also got to be a situation where, and him not being an American citizen, it complicates the NIL thing.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like that's more of the motivating factor at this point.
Right. That'll be a, but I would like to think that there's some situation there. That'll be an interesting one to watch. I mean, if you were asking me, now this is not what the question was, but I'll pose this one anyway. Of the two, who is more likely to come back? I would probably say Mahdi.
I would too, even if Mahdi is guy who's playing 5 minutes a game like he was today. I feel like he's more likely coming back to Michigan State, largely because I feel like his motivation for playing is not, I don't think he has any aspiration in the NBA or probably playing a significant, or even G League or anything like that. I mean, he's got to be looking at ways of supporting his family and sort of his, I feel like his focus is not necessarily on a long career in basketball outside of what he can do to help take care of, his family. And, the best opportunity even might still be sitting on the bench at Michigan State. I don't know, because, injuries happen and stuff. I don't know. That may be better than going to Israel or wherever. I don't know.
I've been a believer in the idea that Tom Izzo doesn't push guys out. And I'm quite certain of that. This will be an interesting test of that, because
I think so, yeah.
You can see us. And so then it becomes, okay, at that point, does he turn to one of Carson Cooper or Jackson Kohler and says, look, you can stay if you want, but I'm bringing somebody in and your role's probably not going to be what you'd like it to be. That could happen if he brings someone in anyway.
Because for sure.
let's put it this way. If they go into the portal for a big man, and let's just say it's a five, I don't think they're going into the portal to get a 15-minute-a-night guy.
Nope.
I think they go in looking for somebody who can really kind of take that position. So then you have to look at it and say, all right, well, there's been this three-headed situation where all these guys have gotten some minutes, but could we be looking at it at something where it's more like one of the two will get some minutes, not both? So, and maybe that's enough. Maybe that's where it comes from. The obvious assumption would be that it's Mahdi because he's used the 4 years. But yeah, it's, I could definitely, if I had to choose between Mahdi and AJ, which one's more likely to be back, it would easily be Mahdi for that reason.
Yeah, no, I think so too. Although I think the chances of either of them being back are still pretty low. I would say less than 10%.
I would want to put a percentage on it, because honestly, I haven't asked anybody who would know. This is strictly my gut feeling, knowing little bits that I know over time, and again, not recently, and just looking at the overall dynamic. But the one caveat to it's definitely low. I agree with you there. I just wouldn't want to assign a number to it. Does that be 10%, 8%, 25%? I don't know. But it's more likely than not, in my opinion, that they are both not going to be back next year.
I think you're right there. Yeah, we'll see. Robbie Avila will be here next year. Just kidding.
That's a great player. Hell of a game today, boy. I assume you watched it.
I, of course, watched it, because Drake got the punched their ticket, and they,
Hell of a game. It'll be interesting to me to see if Indiana State does manage to get in. There seemed to be a lot of pessimism from the CBS folks about them getting an at-large, and that's a shame if that's the case. But, Robbie Avila is a great player that I absolutely could not ever imagine playing at Michigan State.
It'd be interesting to see him if he's ever slimmed down. I don't know that it's even possible. But
well, that's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, we'll enjoy our last, I think, probably for my dad, as far as we'll talk about Drake for 1 second, but
great,
I think
game.
It was a great game. I mean, they're a really good team. It's actually what Darren DeVries has done there is very impressive, over 70% win percentage at Drake. I think almost certainly this is his last year, Drake. His son will be a senior next year, and there's no COVID year for him. And Tucker's a fantastic player. I think he's going to go, and he'll be a package going wherever. I mean,
that's,
I would think
that's a really. I'm glad you brought that up. So let's talk for a second, because this is more enjoyable than the postmortem of another Michigan State loss. I agree with you. You look at it, and you say, what more can this guy do?
Yeah,
at that level, right? He's done it all, and that team's good enough. You could imagine them going on a run to get to the second weekend, right?
It wouldn't be shocking. I mean, they had Miami last year, and they just blew like a 10-12 point lead with 3 minutes left or something.
I would have said the same thing about Indiana State, too, quite honestly. I think they're both that good. This is, getting back to this year was getting back a little bit more to where the Valley was, like, I don't know, a decade or so ago. Mm-hmm. Where you had teams that, every year for a while, well, Wichita State was still in the league, obviously.
Right.
And Creighton was still there. You had programs that if they got in the tournament, man, you didn't want to see them. And that's what it feels like. But you make a really good point, because DeVries not only has a great coaching track record, but he's got a son who is a legit, you put that guy on a high major roster next year, you might be talking about an All-American.
Oh, I think so.
As a senior,
Yeah.
And so then the question becomes, where's the open job? Now, I look around the Big Ten. Ohio State, I don't hear any talk about him. And in fact, with Indiana saying that Mike Woodson's definitely back, it seems to me like Ohio State, and again, I could be wrong about this. I don't pretend to have any particular intelligence related to that job, but it kind of seems like Dusty May or Sean Miller for that job seems to make a lot of sense to me. You don't really hear DeVries' name associated with that job, because the Big Ten is where you would, at least my mind would turn first for a Missouri Valley coach, just because of the geography.
Big 12.
Is DeVries that too? We'll get to that in a second, but is DeVries, is he a Minnesota native?
No, Iowa.
Iowa. So he's a home.
Yeah, he played at UNI, and his brother is younger or older brother, Jared DeVries, played in the Lions for 12 years.
Oh,
he played at Iowa too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, so the Big Ten, I mean, you can always have a surprise happen.
Yeah. But Kevin Willard suddenly gets fired.
I don't think that's after 2 years. I don't think they do that. And Maryland would not. When I think about obvious spots, it wouldn't necessarily be Maryland. It's Big Ten, but as we know, it's not really the Big Ten. It's, Ben Johnson's done enough that he's clearly going to hold on to that job for another year. He's Minnesota's not going to fire him. So what does it come down to? The only one you could really imagine would be Michigan. I would not like to see that.
I don't think they'd be smart enough to hire him. But I also, I'll throw a name out too. Greg Gard. I don't think that he's 100%
interesting
safe in Wisconsin, right?
Well, the fade this year certainly did not help.
Yeah.
But
who knows?
I don't, do you have a sense? Because I don't have a sense. There have been points earlier in his tenure that I thought maybe, but that's an interesting one. Okay, we'll keep our eye on that. And then honestly, as I think about the Big 12, an obvious one too. Nebraska is not going to make a move.
Nope,
because they're going to the tournament. So Northwestern isn't. So the Big Ten really is not a league where, right now there's only one for certain, and there's a very good chance that's where it stops. That the other 13
I don't know, but the new members coming
back
in either.
Washington's already fired Mike Hopkins, but they've already got their replacement lined up. There were some rumors about Dana Altman, but he has stated he retiring, but he stated he's coming back. And then, UCLA.
They'd never hire someone as a mid-major.
No. And there was some talk about USC. But again, maybe. But I would think there would be other regional guys that would get in a USC mix. Maybe we are talking about the Big 12. But God, isn't it it's just so interesting that I think the same thing about Dusty May. It's like there are these mid-major and the Indiana State coach. There are these guys who look to be so ripe for that kind of move. And yet, at least as of right now, you're not seeing a ton of obvious opportunities, you know, meaning opportunities in their region.
Yeah.
That make sense. So I don't know.
Maybe Drake will get lucky, get him one more year.
Yeah, and that would be an upset because, boy, he's certainly done enough to warrant being at somebody's high major job. I mean, I don't know what more. I don't know what more else you could really do. Yeah. The only argument I guess you could make is, well, he hasn't had one of those tournament runs that, you know, kind of stamp a guy like Dusty May had last year.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But he could do it this March. That's for sure.
I wouldn't want to play Drake if I'm some other
team. No, it's a dangerous team.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up here. Just a quick word. If you're interested, this is very strange. So if you're interested and you're in the Grand Rapids area of getting your brakes done, Mike Foster said, hey, can you mention it? It's $75 an axle plus parts. If you are interested and you want to get connected, contact me at eric@tffinots.com. He is a certified mechanic at a local shop, and they're always encouraging their guys to do some work on the side, earn a little extra scratch. So until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.